Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another wonderful, in-depth conversation that we will be having today. This show is about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And if you have been listening to my show, you know that I really believe so strongly on the need to be empowered, truthful information. So before you go and pursue any direction regarding your health and well-being, do your research, get more knowledge, so you not only know how to ask the questions to any health practitioner you are seeing, but you know how to evaluate the answers, which is even more important. So that's why I have wonderful guests on the show, and we can dive into the topics at hand and give you more in-depth knowledge and the ability to really help navigate your way to your health and well-being. If you have not yet opted into either my website, which is drcherylselman.com, please do so, because I will be able then to send you all of my archive podcasts, or you can go like me at What Women Must Know on Facebook, and everything gets posted there as well. So one way or other, you'll be able to get all of the shows. And by the way, I do have another podcast on Progressive Radio Network every Saturday at 11 a.m. called The Love Code. And that is everything to do with your spiritual essence, your spiritual growth, your transformation, your keys to tapping into the power to heal yourself, your body, your life. So another great show where we have really profound conversations. So I hope you'll be joining me on both of my shows, and keep the learning, keep growing, keep getting empowered. That's the name of the game. And the name of the game for today, our show is all about the lowdown on carbs for active women with my guest, Lauren Papanos. And we're also going to be touching in on issues such as PCOS, amenorrhea, thyroid issues. So lots of topics we're going to be exploring and helping to bring more light to the subject to support your health and well-being. So here's a little bit about Lauren. She is a functional medicine registered dietitian and owner of Functional Fueling Nutrition. And Functional Fueling Nutrition offers private coaching and a monthly hormone membership. Lauren is a licensed registered dietitian, nutritionist, and board-certified specialist in sports dietetics through the Commission of Dietetic Registration. She holds both her bachelor's and master's degrees in nutritional sciences, and she works with high-achieving women to get to the root cause of their health issues and help them heal using natural approaches. And as we said earlier, she specializes in PCOS, amenorrhea, thyroid conditions, and exercise performance. So we have a great conversation in store for you today, and it's my pleasure to welcome Lauren to the show. So, Lauren, hello, and welcome to you.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for today's conversation.
Well, so am I, because anything that has to do with women's health and more strategies to address so many of the health challenges that women are facing is right up my alley. So I love to hear what my guests have to say. I love to learn. And mostly I love to support my community. So everyone has that knowledge and that wisdom to navigate these sometimes very challenging conditions. So we have lots to talk about today, Lauren. So, you know, I always like to start by asking my guests, what was it that brought you to this purpose and passion in your life that, you know, has guided you on your path? What were some of the pivotal things that changed the direction or maybe gave you the direction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that for a lot of us that our passion comes from our own personal story or struggle, right? And so for me, it's no different, where I dealt with quite a bit of different gut and hormonal conditions and issues when I was in my early 20s. And, you know, I went to countless specialists and doctors and did all the things that, you know, should be able to solve what I was dealing with. But really no one could seem to figure out what was going on. And that's when I really, kind of decided to dive into the research a bit deeper. And that's when I really started to dive into an integrative approach to nutrition and really start to hone in on the hormonal component of things. And so that, was my own personal story. I dealt with amenorrhea for 4 years, I've dealt with my share of hypothyroidism off and on. And so it's, it definitely was a personal journey that helped me be able to kind of not only just scientifically understand what women need, but also, emotionally and spiritually be able to understand what that feels like to go through some of those really confusing hormone conditions.
That's such a common story, isn't it, with women? And I mean, I've had my own challenges early in my life as well. And, we go to our doctors or gynecologists, whatever, and I have to say, God bless them, but they really don't know how to heal women's hormonal issues. There's like, a toolbox that they go into and, either put them on the pill or give them some thyroid medication or whatever. There's not a lot of tools in the toolbox, to be honest. And it never really addresses the underlying issues that have generated these symptoms. So women, I'll give you an example. When I was 16, I hadn't been menstruating yet. So, which, it's so funny, right, Laura, because at 16, it used to be that was the age when, maybe 50 years ago, 1,500 years ago, that was the age that young women would be starting to menstruate at. And now the average age is 10.9 or something, which is average, but it's not normal. It's not normal. It never used to be that young. That's another subject. But anyway, so I hadn't menstruated or I wasn't regular with my menstruations. I can't really remember. But what did the doctor do? You know what the doctor does when you bring your daughter in and she's 12, 16, she's not menstruating yet. So they put me on the pill. Now, I didn't stay on it very long. I remember that. But knowing what I know now, because, I've spent most of my life delving into women's health issues, I can tell you that that was the most insane thing they could ever do. You'd shut off a woman's ovaries and force her to take these two, carcinogenic drugs to force a bleed, which has nothing to do with getting a young girl healthy so she can menstruate regularly on her own. And I always remember that, Lauren. That's just like, that was so, to me, it was a pivotal example of good intentions, but bad, bad solutions. Yeah. So that's what we're still faced with that, aren't we, these days?
Yeah, it's all too common, unfortunately. It really impacts women hormonally for many years after they come off of birth control.
Yeah, so that's why the work you're doing it's so important. That's why I've been so passionate to continue to learn and grow and heal and be able to really support women to address the underlying issues, and there are many that have contributed. I'm just curious, was it your thyroid issue that created the amenorrhea, or was it your diet or stress or something else?
Yeah, so I think it was multifactorial, honestly. My thyroid actually came after the amenorrhea, so that wasn't a driver. I think that there was definitely a high allostatic load where I just was, I was exercising a lot. I had a lot of gut microbial stress, the inflammation that was going on there. I don't think I was absorbing the nutrients that I was eating efficiently because of that. And I think just overall the stress of all of that really impacted things. I never really had a regular menstrual cycle. I can't remember back to when I first started my menstrual cycle when I was 14 ever being consistent every single month, but I just didn't know at that point in my life that that was unhealthy. And so I think I was already at a heightened risk for things to go a bit wonky. And then, just didn't know that once I lost my period, that it was going to be that challenging to get it back.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is, and while we're on the subject, is that for many young women, they're happy not to have their menstrual cycle, right? So they go, oh, relief. And I mean, we are prescribing a form of the pill these days to stop women from having menstrual cycles because it's too inconvenient and messy. So, you know, we still, you know, so many women, and look, doctors are prescribing them, right, as well, are really encouraging women to turn off their menstrual cycles and thinking it's a good thing. But it's crazy, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why for many women, osteoporosis starts early in a woman's life if she is not menstruating. So especially if you're exercising, an athlete, if this continues, you really will be at higher risk for osteoporosis not that far down the track.
Yeah. Yeah, osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease risk increases, right? I mean, there's just so many unfortunate consequences that aren't, I don't think women are educated enough on, you know, before that starts to happen.
It's true because, you know, Lauren, where do women get educated about these things?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I thankfully, my mother is very holistically minded, and so she was always against me going on birth control, so at least I had that, you know, for my own mother. But other than that, you know, where else are you going to learn? You don't learn this in sex ed or, you know, in any high school core curriculum, right?
That's right. I mean, I never got any of this education. I don't even know how I learned about it, what I needed to know about my own body. And for a long time, I didn't know a whole lot about my own body at all, which is what got me into a lot of trouble with my health when early in my life. But yeah, we should be teaching women a profound understanding of their incredible body, their incredible physiology, you know, get them to really honor their menstrual cycles and just so appreciate their bodies. But, you know, I don't see that happening in our culture until you get a problem and that it causes you to start researching and seeking solutions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the lowdown on carbs. What is it that you have found and are helping your clients with?
Well, I think that carbohydrates in general get a pretty bad reputation, and there's a lot of confusion around them, right? Whether you should eat them, you shouldn't eat them, which ones, how much, when, right? And it can be really overwhelming for women to understand and to know what they should really follow. Of course, with a lot of information, there's an individualized component to it, right? But in that today we're really honing in on the hormonal component, you know, I can really touch on where I see carbohydrates having a role on hormones. You know, there's so many different types of hormonal conditions that are out there, whether that's PCOS, amenorrhea, thyroid conditions, and I think that they all respond differently to carbohydrates. So with women that I work with that have PCOS, for example, it's not about that we need to completely omit carbohydrates, but we definitely need to be mindful of improving insulin resistance, as that's a core driver of PCOS, and really, you know, helping improve insulin sensitivity through maybe decreasing the quantity of carbohydrates, how we eat them, the amount of time between eating them, you know, when they're being eaten. Whereas in conditions like amenorrhea and hypothyroidism, carbohydrates are essential. We need them to be able to convert thyroid hormones. We know that carbohydrates play a role on a neuropeptide in our brain called kisspeptin, which is what regulates our brain-to-ovary communication. So when we're talking about, you know, regaining a menstrual cycle, it's so important that we have a very good communication between our brain and our ovaries, right?
Absolutely. So let's begin by defining what you mean by carbohydrates, because I think, you know, that could be an area of confusion as well. Carbohydrates covers a vast field of different types of foods. So when you talk about carbohydrates, what specific foods are you referring to?
Sure. So we really want the sole amount of the carbohydrates in our diet to come from unrefined, fiber-rich plant sources of carbohydrates. So think of things that are grown from the ground, right? You've got vegetables, you have fruits. I really like women to be including plant starches like legumes and lentils and, you know, tubers, root vegetables, winter squashes, as these can also provide an excellent source of a little bit more starchy carbohydrate than would something like a piece of broccoli or asparagus. Now, I think that grains can have a role for some women, but I typically don't think that they should be a large component of the diet. And I find that for some people, digestively, they don't do as well. So really trying to emphasize, I would say, you know, 75 to 80% of the diet coming from these plant starches and vegetables and fruits is really what we're focused on.
Well, that's really helpful because I think there is a lot of confusion when we talk about carbohydrates. People could be thinking wheat or rice or I don't know what else is out there, or as grains, right? Or
mm-hmm.
we understand that vegetables have, like the ones you mentioned, are also sources of carbohydrates or natural sugars that we were designed to be utilizing in our body, and we need them to support our health as well as the other nutrition that goes along with it. So, where do you put quinoa, which I happen to like quinoa. What are your thoughts about quinoa?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's a pseudo grain, right? So I see it being a little similar to a grain. And like I mentioned, some women do fine with having some unrefined grains in there, you know, rolled oats, quinoa, rice, some unprocessed wheat. That can work for some women, but I would say there's a decent chunk of women who don't do well with those grains, maybe because there's things going on in the gut that need to be corrected, and so that could even be a short-term issue, right?
Yeah, and, you know, there's one other issue that comes up when we talk about any of these foods. It's the food themselves. You know, of course, how it's been hybridized, like wheat, which is another issue. But then it's how it's grown, which to me is the real problem as well because of the use of glyphosate. So this Roundup weed killer, glyphosate, which is not only used in the growing process of plants as a weed killer, but it's used to finish off the grain. So even if they don't use it in the field, it's used to help further ripen the grain. It's such a big problem, Lauren, isn't it? When we talk about using these foods, we have to be more specific and know how they're grown, or at least if they're organic, so we have a better chance of having clean food. But that isn't destroying our gut, which is what glyphosate does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see, you know, what most people refer to as leaky gut or intestinal permeability as a huge driver in a lot of women that, you know, are experiencing autoimmune conditions, you know, whether that be Hashimoto's, Graves' disease, as well as there's a very strong connection between PCOS and high, you know, leaky gut or intestinal permeability. And we know that those herbicides, like you mentioned, are one of the components that can really drive that leaky gut environment.
Yeah, you know, we're modern life is such a minefield, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not so easy as it once was to make choices, to make healthy choices. So that's why we have this conversation. You know, I mean, I just want to say that I understand. I mean, it took me many, many years to understand why I was dealing with weight gain and depression and skin issues. It took me a long time on my journey of getting educated to understand that I was dealing with a leaky gut, and that resulted in Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So now I had an underactive thyroid as well as gluten intolerance and not digesting and depression and, you know, all the things. I look back on that period of my life and I was so miserable. I was so unhappy. I was so depressed. I just didn't know what was going on. And that, you know, it took a while for me to navigate my life to get some of those answers and to heal those issues.
Mm-hmm. It's a journey, absolutely.
And, these conversations are so important because as people are listening to what we're talking about, hopefully their light bulb's going off. So, people, or for themselves, for their daughters, for their granddaughters, for their relatives, friends, coworkers, you get more insight into what might be the issues that are manifesting as these symptoms, because just medicating will never heal the underlying root cause issue. So we need to know more. We need to get more educated. And so let's get more educated about things like PCOS. Let's start there, because that's a big problem for many women. I don't know what the stats are. Do you have any stats on PCOS these days?
I think I saw one this morning that said 1 in 6 women of reproductive age is now the stat.
Wow. Never used to be, right? Never used to be.
Yeah.
Issue. 1 in 6 have PCOS. Okay, let's define what PCOS is for people who may not know what it is, and then we can explore it.
Yeah, so PCOS is a hormonal condition as well as a metabolic condition that happens during a woman's reproductive years, and PCOS stands for polycystic ovary syndrome. But you don't actually need to have cysts on the ovaries for you to have PCOS, so the name can be a bit confusing. You technically need to have three different components to be able to diagnose PCOS, and what can really drive PCOS is a high androgen environment. And androgens are, we call them male-like hormones, which really isn't the best descriptive because, women have them too, but hormones like testosterone and DHEA and androstenedione that are much more elevated in men than they are in women. But it's these elevations of these hormones that can cause a lot of the unwanted symptoms that come along with PCOS, like hirsutism or facial hair growth on the face, irregular menstrual cycles, and ovulation where you're not ovulating each cycle, which then can cause fertility issues. It can definitely drive weight gain, breakouts on the skin, hair loss on the head, fatigue, low mood. All of those are very common symptoms, and it's a very, very common, condition that is the prevalence, as we mentioned, is just continuing to rise and rise. And one of the proposed components that can cause this is the use of birth control and how highly utilized birth control has been for so many women, in their young years, as they were just entering those reproductive years.
Right. The women I've talked to with PCOS, it's a tough condition because, first of all, you tend to, you're insulin resistant, so you tend to have a problem managing your weight. But if you start getting the excessive hair growth or acne on your skin or your hair loss and you start having all these male-like, symptoms, it's tough. It's tough for women. And what have you found out, and how do you help women get back into balance?
Yeah, so I like to identify what are the root causes that are driving their PCOS, because for every woman it can look a little bit differently. Insulin resistance is a very common component. Inflammation, whether that's coming from the diet or from their gut, can also be a really large driver of things. And then cortisol, which is a hormone that's made by our adrenal glands. Adrenal PCOS is kind of type of PCOS that isn't really coming from the ovaries, but is more so a result of, elevations in cortisol because of mismanaged stressors, whether that be through psychological stress, physical stress on the body, right? So I find that identifying the root cause is the most important. For most women, there's multiple components. And then from that, we can really understand where we need to correct things. So, do we need to heal a leaky gut situation right? Do we need to, really work on improving their blood sugar control and insulin sensitivity throughout the course of the day? Do we really need to work on the adrenal component and their stress management that comes from, you know, the exercise they're doing, the lifestyle that they're living? All of those components are critical to really helping a woman naturally be able to improve PCOS, not just slapping a birth control pill on it, which can improve symptoms, but doesn't actually improve the condition, right?
Well, never. It'll actually lead to more problems down the track, to be honest. You know, there are 120 known side effects associated with the pill, and you get depleted in all these key nutrients and minerals, and you further your gut microbiome issues. I mean, it's a really disaster. You know, I've done a lot of research into the consequences of the pill, and it's crazy that we're prescribing it like candy to women. So, just to clarify, if anyone is listening, if anyone knows of someone and they're struggling with more excessive hair growth around on their body or on their face, or they're craving sugar, they're sugar addicts, or they're finding that their hair is thinning out, those are some common symptoms. It's important to understand and to read these symptoms as potentially an issue with this polycystic ovarian syndrome condition, and then begin to find the cause. I know the adrenal component is such a big one. Well, I mean, even hormones are made in our gut. So estrogens, the production of estrogen starts in our gut, which is really interesting. And then the adrenals play such a large role with hormones. And if we're under stress, then we're causing that insulin to be dysregulated. So we have to unravel the root cause. The pill will never solve the problem. And then the problem is a woman can be infertile if she doesn't deal with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So have you been successful? I mean, I would imagine you are. That's your practice. But do you have any stories you can share, women who have addressed these underlying issues and found their balance again, their menstrual cycles functioning naturally again?
So many. And, you know, that's my passion and my purpose, you know, and what I do is helping women, be able to feel better, because ultimately my mission is to, you know, help women improve their health so that they can feel confident and then, you know, pour into other people in whatever capacity they do that through their own profession and passion, right? So, yes, definitely. And I would say that, you know, just thinking of a current patient that I'm working with who, I've been working with for about 6 months, and she was doing seamlessly all the right things in terms of, you know, she was eating a pretty good diet. She was exercising very rigorously. She was on some vitamins and supplements, but she couldn't understand why she was still having acne, why she was not able to lose weight and, continuing to gain weight, why she was having a lot of GI issues and why she hadn't had a period. I mean, she says that she doesn't even remember the last time that she had a box of tampons in her house because that's how irregular she was menstruating, right? And so she was really a cause where we really do have to identify, we have to do some testing to really unravel what is driving, her to be so symptomatic. And so, you know, through testing, we were able to find, yes, there was some insulin resistance that was going on despite some of her healthy habits, right? There were some cortisol dysregulation issues that were probably a component driving the insulin resistance. She did have some nutrient deficiencies in certain areas, and her androgen production was really high. You know, there were some gut issues going on as well. And so I like to, you know, explain to women that the way I see healing is that it's a domino effect, right? We can't expect the body to heal 10 different systems simultaneously, right? It's really about identifying what's the first domino that has to fall to really be able to allow for the rest of the healing cascade to happen. And so that's what we essentially did was, you know, looking at and really taking apart her current diet and reorganizing that, her current exercise, you know, still incorporating a lot of things that she was doing, but doing it in a lot more of an intentional manner that really supported reducing insulin and reducing that cortisol drive that she was getting. And then just implementing some lifestyle practices throughout the day to help with the stress management and help with compliance to the dietary changes and things. You know, and of course we use some supplements for some of the gut issues that were going on and some of the deficiencies and things, but she's in such a great place now. I mean, it's just so wonderful to hear because it's, you know, it's, to me, it's always about when you improve these symptoms, how it improves someone's confidence and their well-being holistically in their life, right? Of, you know, being able to start new endeavors with their professional life and, you know, being able to, you know, improve the relationships because they feel more confident in the way that they look, right? And so, you know, and then I think the biggest thing is just giving them clarity and this is why you've been feeling this way and here's exactly what to do. And with that confidence of knowing what to do, it really takes a lot of like that guesswork and frustration out of what they've been doing.
Absolutely. So what would you say, or just for, you know, for people listening who may have knowledge of someone dealing with PCOS, so what would you have as some of the, you know, first steps for women to look at? And by the way, I think this is something you really need to see a good integrative, holistic practitioner of some sort, whether it's someone like yourself trained with nutrition or acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, or, you know, and there are many modalities, but you need some help because it's complicated as you were describing.
Yeah, it can be very complicated, and without that testing, it's hard to really pinpoint where to start, you know. But I would say a couple of things that I really teach women as the fundamentals and the foundation for improving PCOS, but really just improving overall hormone health, because a lot of hormones, our whole entire endocrine system is connected, right? So if we can improve some hormones, then a lot of the others will start to fall into alignment. But the first and foremost thing is really improving your blood sugar control throughout the day. So I like to get women away from the idea of like small meals grazing all throughout the day, because all that does is just keep the continuous supply of glucose or sugar in the bloodstream. I like to really teach women how to build a plate that has protein and it has fiber and it has good healthy fats in there, at, you know, all at the same time, and then allowing for 4 to 5 hours between meals before they then eat again, so that blood sugar has a chance to drop. You know, we can improve our metabolic flexibility, and your digestive system has adequate time to be able to fully clear out everything that you just put into your digestive system, right? So I would say that goes a very far way for a lot of women, and a lot of women may believe that they're currently doing that, but then when I really dissect what their diet looks like, I find that they're doing that, but then there's snacks that don't follow that guideline, or there's grazing that's happening in between those meals. And so it's really about helping them understand that, no, this needs to this is how your meals, snacks all need to look throughout the course of the day. So that's a really important component. I also think that really helping women understand how to manage stressors. So I mentioned earlier allostatic load, which is essentially just a fancy term for saying all of the different stressors that make up your nervous system, right, or that impact your nervous system. So we're not just talking about psychological stress, right? We're talking about, you know, how your nervous system is handling the exercise that you're doing. We're talking about how frequently you're eating throughout the day, how much sleep you're getting, you know, how much sun you're getting, and, you know, your blue light exposure, electronics, and the timelines that you're using those, right? But, like, all of that can go such a large way in really supporting our adrenals. And as I mentioned, our adrenals play a really strong driver in that insulin resistance and that androgen production that can cause a lot of those PCOS symptoms. So if we can really work at more intentionally structuring workouts and really prioritizing sleep and improving sleep quality, you know, really prioritizing daily routines, getting out in the sunlight first thing when you wake up, not watching a ton of TV right before you go to bed, some of those very more like lifestyle will really start to improve that adrenal function and that cortisol response, and that then in turn improves PCOS symptoms.
Well, you know, as you're talking, which I agree with everything you just said. I mean, I'm up watching the sunrise every morning, and I don't have LED lights on at night because there's just so many pieces to unravel. The light exposure, which is a whole other story, can definitely increase insulin resistance in the body, how the brain receives that information through the inappropriate frequencies of light. So, you know, not to overwhelm people who are listening, but the message is that we really have to get educated. We have to investigate, and we have to be willing to peel back the many layers of the onion skin to optimize our health again. Our culture, the way our culture has evolved, has, you know, basically it's the enemy of our health. Everything about our, you know, culture that is driven, you know, through advertising or just how we're choosing to live, does not support a healthy body, especially for women, because our bodies are so much more sensitive to these stressors. As you were saying, you know, whether it's sleep impairment or whether it's eating the wrong diet. I think it's really interesting you're talking about this snacking and small meals, because that was very trendy at one time, right? It's like, if you want to manage your blood sugar, have smaller meals, and that's, you know, anyway, that's been debunked. You don't want to be snacking. You don't want to be grazing. You don't want to have many small meals during the day. You want to basically fast between meals and let your body properly digest the food than to throw lots of food at it throughout the day, which is dysregulating. Crazy, right? Crazy that was a trend at one time.
I know, and that's why women are so confused, because, you know, they've heard carbs are bad, don't eat bananas, don't eat potatoes. They've heard, you know, eat small meals all throughout the day, and it's just like, how do they figure out what information to actually take with them and what's actually specific to what they're dealing with, you know?
Exactly. You know, that's why these conversations are so important, because this is, you know, your work, this is my work, trying to get to the truth of what really will support our optimal health. And it's not an easy job these days, I have to say. You know, it really takes a lot of sorting out and trying to get to the bottom of what's really not just the truth in general, but our truth, right? What each body requires at every stage of life. And whatever adjustments need to be made as we move through various stages and ages of life. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about amenorrhea. Let's you know, define it. How common is that, Lauren? And what are you learning and helping women with?
Yeah, so with amenorrhea, it's a lot less common than PCOS, and there's two different types of amenorrhea. There's primary amenorrhea, which means that you have not had a menstrual cycle and you're past the age of 16 years, as well as secondary amenorrhea, where you've had a menstrual cycle, but then you've lost your menstrual cycle. And so we classify something as amenorrhea once you haven't had a cycle in at least 6 months. So most commonly I see in practice is what's called hypothalamic amenorrhea. And that gets its name because the region in our brain is called the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus is what signals to our pituitary gland, which then tells us to make gonadal-releasing hormone, which then tells our ovaries to make, you know, luteinizing hormone, follicular-stimulating hormone, which then makes estrogen and progesterone. So it's all connected, right? And so I see this a lot less common with women, but, you know, my background as being a sports dietitian as well, it was a lot more common in that space. because with athletes in particular, there's a lot of mismanaged stressors that are happening, and sometimes they're out of their control where, you know, they don't have control over managing the amount of training that they're doing because it's coming from their coach, right? Maybe they don't have control over how much they're able to sleep at night because they have practiced really late and then they have to wake up the next morning for school or a job. And maybe there's even financial constraints related to how much food they're able to buy to ensure that they're meeting their energy needs, right? So it's complex, absolutely. And there's actually a term that's called relative energy deficiency in sport, which is kind of like an umbrella term to define that this doesn't just happen in women. It also happens in men, where they also see impacts happening because of this to their testosterone production as well.
Yeah, you know, it's not just athletes, but it's also women who, I guess you might say, are addicted to the gym, right? So it's this continuous hard workout, which can become addictive for many people, but it's that huge demand on the body, which is the stress and maybe restriction of food to get that, you know, ideal figure, but those intense, consistent, maybe daily workouts, which are really unnatural for women to do.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's the mismanagement of it, right? I don't believe that it's just the workouts. It's that they're doing those workouts while also under eating, doing them in a fasted state, you know, not sleeping enough so that they can get the workout in before they then go work their stressful job, right? So it's all of those factors that go into it with women that really want the best of all worlds, but it ends up really harming their reproductive hormone output because of that.
So what are your favorite recommendations for women who are dealing with amenorrhea? And I understand, you know, it's very specific for each case, but give us some general guidelines.
Yeah, well, the first thing I like to do is get an audit of everything that's going on within their diet, their lifestyle, you know, socioeconomic stressors as well, because that helps really paint the picture of what we actually have control over helping them change, right? So most commonly, I would say in these situations, it's helping women reorganize the amount of exercise that they're doing or the intensity of it, the environment in which they're doing these workouts. So, you know, not doing them fasted off of 5 hours of sleep, right? That's a good start. It's also helping women understand how they should be eating and how much they should be eating throughout the course of the day. And I'm not big on calorie counting. I think it's an ineffective strategy, but I am big on helping women understand like what their meals should look like, what the volume should be, the frequency, because that ultimately is how we meet our energy needs throughout the day. So I think it's looking at all of those areas and making sure that those boxes are all checked, right? And sometimes there's cases where they're more complex than that. Like I was one of those where I was doing all those things. I had stopped exercising. I had, you know, been eating so much food that was uncomfortable and nothing was happening. And so that's really when I had to take a deeper dive into, okay, what's going on within my gut? You know, what's going on that's also stressing my nervous system, that's really impairing my brain from saying, hey, ovaries, turn on, you know, start making these hormones to make a menstrual cycle happen.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting when we have to dive in and unravel all these pieces. Do you find, I have a question for you, do you find that a lot of women with amenorrhea are vegans or vegetarians?
Yeah, a lot of dietary restrictions, absolutely, yeah. Vegan, vegetarian, you know, gluten and dairy free definitely are very common.
Yeah, you know, I remember I was studying traditional Chinese medicine for a while, and there was a woman in that course who had just come back from India. She spent a period of time. She was very thin. In India, of course, the diet is mostly vegetarian, which is why, by the way, Indians have one of the highest rates of diabetes in the world because of their restrictions. Anyway, she was amenorrhea, but she hadn't had her period for a really long time. And the teacher said, well, this is what you need to do. You need to have more red meat in the diet. Now, you know, if you have belief systems that, you know, are choosing to make your diet vegan or vegetarian, it's a really hard thing to comprehend. But in traditional Chinese medicine, food is medicine. And you eat the food that is required to address the problems, the health problems that you're having. And from that model, red meat is red, you know, it's red. Think of red, color of blood. And in traditional Chinese medicine, having, and not necessarily eating steaks, by the way, right, just small amounts, a couple of times a week, actually helped this woman build up her production of blood, so she arrived at a place where she had enough blood to release it as a menstrual cycle. And after several months of doing that, she was able to menstruate again. And we have to emphasize, and we talked about this, Lauren, but it's worth stating again, that without a healthy menstrual cycle, you are at risk of things like osteoporosis, and you're at risk of infertility. You're not menstruating. You're not ovulating. So we have a huge problem with that, but it also affects other risk factors for health down the track, as we're saying, cardiovascular disease, and mood, and, you know, just sense of well-being if you're not in a healthy state where your body is working as it should and having regular menstrual cycles. So it's a big story.
Yeah, and I think that red meat gets a really bad rap as well, in addition to carbohydrates, because for some reason, you know, it's told to women that it's very unhealthy. And I think that it can have medicinal properties if it's of good quality and it's used properly, right, within the diet, because for a lot of women, they just aren't getting enough of the fat-soluble vitamins like retinol and, you know, vitamin D that are so important for making hormones. And we get a lot of those from eating foods like red meat, you know, and so, and let alone the iron that's involved in making thyroid hormones, right? So, yeah, I think that the more dietary restrictions there are, the more increased chance there is of hormone imbalances to happen.
Right. Okay, what else? Well, in the time we have left, should we talk about thyroid? I love talking about thyroid issues.
Yes, me too. I love the thyroid as well.
Well, so let's talk about the thyroid issues and different thyroid imbalances. Having said that, I mean, I discovered, you know, down the track as I was trying to unravel my story, that I had Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which it turns out is the majority of thyroid issues, even though it may not be properly tested. To be discovered, right? A lot of doctors won't do the test for the antibodies. They'll just look at the TH numbers, TH4, and they go, you're hypothyroid, but not diving deeper to get more specific as to what is really going on with the thyroid.
Yeah, it's very common that, you know, just TSH is going to be tested and someone might not even be able to glean insight into their free T3 levels, which is really what's the most important, because that's the actual active thyroid hormone that's helping, you know, your cells and tissues with metabolism, hair growth, you know, essentially any growth process in the body, the thyroid's playing a role.
So let's talk about what the thyroid does, because that's always a good place to begin. I think it's so profound, the role of the thyroid and why we really want to optimize our thyroid function. So let's kind of look at all the effects of an imbalance or a dysfunction of a thyroid.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thyroid is such an important component to the entire endocrine system, right? And your thyroid's located in your neck. It's a little butterfly-shaped organ, and it's what is going to release thyroid hormones. TSH is just thyroid stimulating hormones. That's really just telling us the communication between our brain and our thyroid. But we're really looking to see is, what are your free T4 levels? What are your free T3 levels? You know, looking at antibodies if that's a suspected issue, because that tells us if the immune system or the body's attacking the thyroid, right? So the thyroid is incredibly important to, as I mentioned, anything that regulates growth in the body. So, you know, if we're talking about weight maintenance, right? Our energy metabolism of the food that you're eating, the thyroid plays a role. Hair growth, nail growth, your skin, the amount of fluid that you have under your skin, your digestive motility, how quickly food moves through your digestive tract, and fertility, right? I mean, we need thyroid hormones in order to be able to grow a baby, right? So there's so many components that the thyroid plays in just our overall health and well-being, and especially in how we feel internally and how we look externally.
Exactly. So many things can be, and even the risk of cardiovascular disease, heart issues, fibromyalgia is related to dysfunctioning thyroid, but it's often missed, right? It's often missed as the cause, and it's one level of cause, and then you've got to dive deeper to see what has been pushing the thyroid to be dysfunctional. So let's dive, in the time we have, let's dive a little bit deeper in some of the recommendations that you have, Lauren.
Yeah, so when someone is dealing with hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, I always want to ask the question of why, right? What's the underlying cause that drove this to happen? And for a lot of women, I find that there's something in the gut that's imbalanced, and this is very common when we talk about autoimmune thyroid conditions. So whether it's, a leaky gut or there's dysbiosis where there's, imbalance of bacteria because maybe there's foods we're not eating enough of or foods we're eating too much of that are driving, an imbalance of the bacteria in our gut. But then also looking at that cortisol piece. There again, cortisol comes into the picture, right? Because when we have elevations in cortisol, that's going to drive thyroid-stimulating hormone. And, over time, that's going to impact how much of that free thyroid hormone level that we have. So I always like to think of it as like someone that's knocking on the door, right? If we see a high TSH, it's like someone that's knocking on the door that's trying to get into the party and no one's listening, no one's opening up the door. So that person keeps knocking louder and louder. And that's essentially TSH. It's, our TSH keeps rising and rising because we're trying to get the thyroid hormones to respond, but they're not. And so, looking at, what is that stress load? Like, are there issues going on with cortisol? Are we eating enough carbohydrates? Carbohydrates are essential for that thyroid hormone conversion. Are we getting enough minerals in the diet? The thyroid is very mineral dependent. And minerals like selenium and magnesium, making sure we have enough iodine and iron in the diet, all are going to help us be able to make and then convert those thyroid hormones into actual, like, usable components that, can target those tissues and organs that need it most.
First of all, I want to say that if anyone has a thyroid issue, if anyone's been diagnosed with a thyroid issue or suspect they have a thyroid issue and want to get tested, you have to ask your doctor to test for your antibodies. Because unless you test for your antibodies, you don't really know what is contributing to your sluggish thyroid, and antibodies indicate that you have an autoimmune condition, which is affecting and hampering, if not destroying, your thyroid. So you've got to get that information. And I just say that to everyone listening. It's like, do what you have to do to get your doctor to include the antibodies in any blood work that they do for your thyroid. And, as you're describing, there's so much to be said. We can do, hours on these topics. But to me, as I'm listening to you, Lauren, the bottom line is that we need to get, first of all, educated. We need to get more educated. We need to know that things just don't show up in our bodies. It's the result of what has been going on, with some level of dysfunction. Even though we've tried the best, but we're still not getting the missing pieces of the puzzle. And we need to find those practitioners who are educated in a holistic approach that can help us unravel the mysteries of our own bodies and why our bodies aren't functioning the way they should, which is a big story, right? I mean, this is why you're educating. This is why I have the show. This is why we're both passionate about helping women navigate this world of craziness to get back to health.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's both of our purposes, right, is to help women be educated and be empowered and to not fear their body, but to really lean in and honor their body, because when we work with our body rather than against it, I really do believe that beautiful things can happen.
Exactly. So tell us about what you are doing with your work, with your functional fueling website and your programs. So if people want to get more knowledge or they want to get in touch with you for help, how do they go about doing
yeah.
that? What are you doing?
Yeah, so I'm based out of Los Angeles, but I work virtually, and I work one-on-one with anyone that's based in the United States from a one-on-one coaching perspective, but I also have a hormone membership that's called Strength and Hormones, and that's open to women worldwide, and essentially that's a program of women that are on very similar journeys that are dealing with a lot of hormone symptoms, where you receive education, support, resources around nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise that's specific to hormone healing and helping you unravel the mystery of your hormone imbalances, right? And so that's my membership. And then I also offer one-on-one private coaching where I do some of this integrative lab testing and work with individuals one-on-one to help them get answers and also use, you know, natural modalities like nutrition, lifestyle, supplements to be able to, you know, help them heal.
Well, great work that you're doing. And if people want to know more, then go over to Lauren's website, which is functionalfueling.com, and learn more about all her programs. And see if she's the person to help you. But certainly, the more you gain knowledge, the more you will find the way to restore your health and be guided to the right people who can help you. So, Lauren, this has been a great conversation, so important to help women understand more what's going on and know that there are answers and there is healing waiting for them as they start this journey to their health and well-being. Thanks so much for all that you do and for your passion and purpose and support for women.
Thank you so much for having me and for allowing me to share with your listeners, and, you know, just helping empower and educate them. And you know, I hope that we as women can collectively all, you know, continue to learn and help support one another on their own healing journey.
So be it. I'm with that. And again, if you want to know more about Lauren's work, go to functionalfueling.com. Thanks again, Lauren, for being on the show, and all the best. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining me for another really enlightening program and opportunity to be empowered. And as I always like to say at the end of the show, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.